So this will be the last talk I'll be giving for a while, because for the month of March I'll be teaching at Spirit Rock, teaching a month-long retreat there. A few people from IMC are going to be there as well, sitting the retreat. It's one of my favorite things to do, is to teach this retreat. It's really quite awe-inspiring what can happen when people spend a month on silent retreat, meditating most of the time. So I've invited a whole series of speakers to come and talk while I'm gone. So both for Mondays and Sundays, Sunday mornings, we'll have guest teachers. This evening I wanted to give what might be called more of a Zen talk. Part of the reason it's a Zen talk is it has to do with a very important theme of practice that I learned at the San Francisco Zen Center. That's where I picked it up, and it was a very important part of the practice there and how I understood my Buddhist practice. So in that it's a Zen, kind of a Zen talk, I'll start with a Zen story. And that is, can people hear okay? So, there was once a young man who wanted to enter into a Zen monastery in Japan. And he showed up at the gates with great fire and determination and asked for permission to enter into the monastery. So he was given an interview with the abbot, and the abbot asked him why he wanted to come and become a monk, leave the world behind and engage himself in that kind of full-time spiritual practice. And the young man said, I want to find out who I am. And the abbot said, that's the wrong question. You can't come into the monastery with that question. Come back some other time. And when I was in Japan many years ago, I was having a conversation with a somewhat famous Rinzai Zen master. I was visiting his temple. I had a translator. I spoke a little bit of Japanese. And I asked a question, a little discussion, and then out of the blue, the abbot pointed to the door and for me to leave. And he said, come back 20 years before. And, you know, the Japanese was not that complicated, what he was saying, but the translator, you know, not sure, is that what you said? Or? Yet, come back, get from me, come back 20 years before. There's the door, you can leave now. So, I had no choice but to leave. Very abrupt. So, this young man came to the monastery, and the abbot said, you're asking the wrong question, you can't enter the monastery and come back. So the man came with a question. And the idea of questioning is a very important part of the Zen practice I was trained in. And having a question, entering into any situation with the spirit of a question. And the spiritual quest, the word quest and question are cognates. They're words that closely come together. And so the spiritual quest, the seeking, it has a sense of questioning in it, at least in Zen. Questioning, what is this? What's going on? Some questioning. And questioning is very important, because questioning, the right kind of questioning, is what keeps us fresh, open, open to new possibilities. One of the great difficulties of any spiritual life is stagnation. One of the difficulties is certainty, thinking now I know what it is. And the questioning, having it always be ready to question, kind of breaks through stagnation, breaks through the kind of false certainty that now I know what it is. There's a saying I came across many years ago that said, it says something like, trust those who are seeking the truth, not those who have found it. And then there's a short story, it goes in our circles quite a bit, of Mara, who's the Buddhist devil, whose job description is to stop people from getting enlightened, was out wandering around with an attendant, and they came across a monk who was doing walking meditation outdoors, back and forth. And suddenly, it was like the monk saw something. His mind lit up with great understanding and realization. And the attendant said to Mara, "Mara, just look. Don't think we should do something about this monk? He seems like he's understood something." And Mara said, "Oh, don't worry about him. Soon enough, he'll turn it into a belief." And then there's the idea that you can maybe find some religions, some spiritual traditions, including Buddhist ones. Buddhism is not exempt from this. Of a kind of fundamentalism, which can be defined a little bit like, where they don't encourage you to seek. Rather, the encouragement is, seek no further. This is it. We have it for you. We have the answer. Seek no further. So, questioning. Questioning keeps us fresh, keeps us open, keeps us exploring. And it's kind of like, there's always more. I like the little saying that goes, or the bumper sticker that goes, reality is not what you think it is. And as soon as you think you know what reality is, know what who you are, know anything for some certain way, there's always going to be something that's outside of that knowing. And then you could stay within the circle of your knowing, or you could kind of use questioning to find what's beyond that limit of what I know. What is it? What's going on? And I think that that's one of the great offerings or gifts that idealistic young people give to those of us who are old and set in our ways, is they show up, young people show up on the scene somehow or other, and they're not going to take the old information, you know, the truths that the previous generation has found. They're not going to settle for that, because they're always ready to question that and go beyond. What's outside of that? What's beyond that? It's a great thing to always be questioning and looking. What's beyond? What is it? At the Zen Center in San Francisco, this whole idea of questioning is sometimes encapsulated in the idea of beginner's mind, having a beginner's mind. In fact, the temple of the San Francisco Zen Center at Page Street in San Francisco, the temple name for San Francisco Zen Center, it's almost never used, but the temple name is a beginner's mind temple. And the idea there being that the beginner's mind is a person who has beginner's mind is not set in their way. The expert is supposed to be set. They seem to know what's what, supposedly, in this idea. But the beginner is always ready to kind of question. And for the beginner, often there's new possibilities open up that the expert wouldn't see, because the expert kind of has a set way of seeing things. Now, in real life, it doesn't exactly work out that way, but the principle is to always keep them in the beginner's mind. So the young man came to the monastery with this question. You know, who am I? Which is like one of the great perennial questions. And the abbot said to him, "That's the wrong question." And then what I didn't tell you was that the young man then said, "But I read all these books, and these books say this is the great question. You have to kind of penetrate this question. If you penetrate this question, you get realization." And the abbot said, "Books, what do they know? Go away. Come back some other time. Come back with a real question." And so the young man left and came back the next day, having thought about it for a while. And he said, "I have a question." And the abbot said, "Well, let's hear it. I want to discover what is true. What is truth?" (Laughter) out. He pointed to the door. Out. So the young man hung his head down and left and thought about it for a while. And this time he thought about it for a couple of days. And came back and said, okay, now my question is, you know, what is liberation? So that's this core of Buddhism, liberation. Well, that's my question. That's what I want to pursue. That's what I'm seeking, my quest. What is liberation? Out. Out. So this guy, you know, this poor guy, he couldn't understand he thought he was sincere, he thought he was really into it, and he had these questions, these burning questions, and he wanted to get to the bottom of life, and this abbot just wasn't buying it. What's going on? So, okay, I've got to really take this seriously. And so he went out and he started wandering around a little bit and trying to find the wisest people he could find. And he asked them, what's the question? What's the really important question I need to have so I can go to the monastery? So maybe this guy found some of you. What do you think is the question? Yes?
I'm just wondering if the question is, what is the question?
So that's one wise person's response. So other possibilities.
What am I going to find here that I won't find outside the temple?
Ah, what will I find here that I won't find outside the temple? This is a good question. But the abbot is very strict. So, what else? What else there is to try? Yes?
Is there another temple nearby?
Is there another temple nearby? Is there another temple nearby? The abbot would say, yes, get out of here, go find them. By all means. Sometimes it's very hard to get into a Zen temple. They just kick you, every chance they can, they kick you out. You know, when I came to practice at a Zen monastery in Japan, I came to live there for a while. And you show up at the gates, and the first thing they do is they have you just stand at the gate. They won't let you come in. And you just stand there, and maybe because I was a foreigner, but they didn't let me stand there as long as they normally would. And in some traditions in Zen, it's 3 days. You just stand there. Or just kneel there in front of the temple. And, you know, it's quite a gruesome thing. And you have to sleep at night. They open up the gate and go into a little guest quarter just inside the gate for you to sleep at night. But they have to go outside again and sit in front of the gate and bow there, kneel down. And where I went, it wasn't that long. So after I was standing at the gate for a few hours, then a senior monk came out and he asked me questions. He could test me, you know, find out if I was really worthy of coming into the monastery. So they were asking me questions. In this case, the monk has to find the question. So anybody else? What is? Yes?
Maybe he doesn't actually want the person to ask the question, he just wants them to be still.
Oh, so instead of, he wants them just not to keep asking questions, a symptom of restless mind.
Exactly. But he wants the person to demonstrate his still mind.
Great. Beautiful. Okay. But still, he's waiting for a question. And so the young man comes back and he sat in meditation for a whole week. He's really still and quiet, and he sits in front of the monastery gate and he just shows a stillness. In fact, the monks come out and revile him and spit on him, and he's unmoved, unfazed. And but the abbot comes out and sees what's going on and he says, out. So. Yes.
Who asks the question?
Who asks the question? So he comes back and he says, my question is, who's asking the question? It's a great question. Who's asking the question? Or who am I? It's kind of like, or who knows? Who's the one who knows? It's a great question. Who knows? Who is it that knows? Anything. And these are all great questions. But the abbot just keeps sending the monk away. The monk, he's not a monk yet, but sends the guy away. Anybody else want to try?
I got one.
What? Yes?
What kind of work do you have for me in the monastery?
Oh, nice. That's very good. What kind of work do you have? That's very nice. What kind of work do you have for me in the monastery? So very practical, very immediate. Just how can you be of service? So rather than what's in it for me, I want to get something. You know, what can I do for you? How can I serve? You know, put me to work. Let me train. You know, in the details of life. It's great. It's great. I love it. But still, out. Yes.
Just the idea that I want to learn what the question is. I want to learn from you, from your masters.
I want to learn from you and your masters and all your masters' masters and what's really true, what you know, and. Out. Oh yeah.
What's wrong with me?
What's wrong with me? There's another question, but similar to that. That's a very good question to ask, and I'd recommend all of you to ask this question because I suspect many of you are really good at that question. What's wrong with you? But why don't you ask the question, "What's right with me?" What kind of answer did you get that then? And how do you feel in response? But anyway, out to the gate. Yes? You're trying again.
There is no single question.
It's not a question. He's looking for a question. He has to come back with a question. So, out. So I've done this kind of thing. Not exactly this, but I've been to these some Zen masters where you keep showing up trying to offer an answer. And they just, you know, usually they ring a bell. You know, nope, out you go. Out you go. You know, what are you, Jesus, you know, I'm wasting my youth, you know. I'm sitting here thinking, pondering, and I ring my, you know, I go in and I'm really, he doesn't understand. He doesn't understand me, and he missed my, you know, he somehow, you know, you know, and you have all these reactions and responses. The guy's crazy, and you have a perfectly good answer, and bing, 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 and you go day after day after day, bing, bing. So that.
What am I doing here?
That's a great question. What am I doing here? And that's what the abbot's asking. What are you doing here? Out. Yes. Let's ask somebody, another voice.
Yeah.
Why do you ask for a question? That's good. That's beginning to show some initiative there, kind of questioning back and challenging. I like it. I like it. So, good. But out. Awesome. Yes?
How can I end this dissatisfaction?
How can I end this dissatisfaction? Great. That's like, you know, maybe he's been studying Buddhism because in the teachings of the Buddha, that is like the core question that's supposed to be the appropriate question. What is the suffering? And where is the end of that suffering? The Buddha said there are many questions you can ask that are the wrong questions to ask. And you should actually know what questions you should ask. And that's one of the questions, you just said. So that's very good. The Buddha would have been very happy with you. But the abbot said, out. Yes. There are no fixed questions? It's not a question, so I'm sorry. Yes, please.
So my question currently is, how can I best live my life? And if the answer is, you know, out, then, all right, where else can I go? Because that's what's important to me. And if I can't work on that here, I'd want to work on that somewhere else.
So you show up at the gate and you say, well, you're not accepting any of my questions, so where can I work on this question? Where can I work on what's important?
Yeah.
And the abbot just goes. it's fine with me. You don't have to be here in the monastery. We don't need you here. We don't particularly want you. But if you want to come back here, you got to ask. You come back with a real question.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Do I already have all the answers?
What do you think the abbot said? Out. So it's very important to know how to ask a question, in a spiritual question. And so the young man then started trying to figure out, well, maybe it's how I ask it, maybe it's the way I am. So one of the ways is to ask in silence. And it's one of the great things to do is to sit in meditation or go someplace where there's silence, go for a walk in the woods or something, and somehow get the mind still, like someone said, still mind. And then also get in touch with your body, kind of feel like you're in your body or with your body or sensing your body in a very deep way. And then find out what is the important question, or to ask a question if you have one and see what bubbles up as an answer. What's really, or to ask in that stillness, or ask in the face of, either because you can imagine sitting next to it or it's real, like asking something in the face of death. If you're going to die, or someone you love just died, or you know about death's really close by, what are the important questions? What's the important issues in life, in the context of something as big as death? That tends to clarify things very quickly. And then to ask questions which are not too abstract. Part of the reason that I titled my book "The Issue at Hand" is it's one translation of a Zen expression called Genjo Koan. And Genjo Koan is sometimes translated also as, or interpreted as meaning understanding what the question is right here and now. What is it, the question right here and now? So the issue, and I also like the issue at hand, because the idea, maybe I say this in my book, but at hand, it's so tangible. It's something that's immediate and present and felt. It's not abstract. I've been on retreats sometimes where on the fifth day of the retreat, someone will come to me and say, an interview, could you recommend a good book for me to read on Buddhism? And it's completely weird on the fifth day of the retreat to ask that kind of question, because it's so abstract, so distant from the intensity and power of being right here with oneself. And the whole, after 5 days of having teachings about being here, being present and discovering the practice in yourself here in this moment, can you give me a book on Buddhism? It's a good question in another context, but it's kind of weird, I find it weird in that context. And some people have a tremendous capacity to avoid themselves, avoid the present, and ask abstract questions. Yes, please.
Well, if I want to know one thing, let's say I could ask God, a question, I say, how can I learn how to love?
How can I learn how to love? That's a great question. How can I learn how to love? How can I learn how to have compassion? How can I learn how to be kind? How can I be helpful? How can I be of service? Those are great, great questions. And so the young man comes, sees the abbot and says that, and the abbot looks deeply in his eyes, and maybe the abbot's really still for a while looking at him, and maybe a single teardrop goes down the abbot's cheek. And then the arm goes up. Out. Lord, you guys are brave. Yeah, yes, Nita. May I come in? Very, very simple, direct, very simple. May I come in? I like it, but no, wrong question. Bill.
Personal question, and then perhaps the other person. Whom does the Dharma serve?
Whom does the Dharma serve? Is this a question for the young man's asking, or a question you're asking me separate from that?
This would be the question I'm asking myself, but I think a possible response is, what is an appropriate response?
So what is an appropriate response? That's a great question. In fact, it's a famous koan, maybe you know it. There's a famous Zen story of someone, I think, went to a famous master, and old master, he was been a Zen practitioner for maybe 60 years. And the young guy asked the master, after all these years of Zen practice and teaching, after a lifetime of Zen, what's the essential teaching you have? What's the essential thing you've realized? And the teacher said, an appropriate response. And the idea being that there's no right answer in the abstract. the right answer has to do with the particulars of the situation you're in and knowing what's the appropriate response here. What is this response? What's required now? Yes?
Well, in fact, you just posed the question that I had thought of a moment ago, and that was the issue at hand. So one might reach for something at hand, a pebble or a blade of grass, and hold it up and ask, what is this?
What is this? That's a beautiful question. The it's kind of like one of the, I think of that also as one of the kind of prime Buddhist questions, and certainly for Vipassana students, and also in Zen students, asking, "What is this? What is this?" and never settling for an answer. So that's a very important state of not settling for an answer, but always, you know, asking the question, then being ready to ask again, or look further. What is this? What is this really? And if you get an answer, what is it really? Let's look more closely. What is it? What is it? And certainly in insight meditation, that's kind of the spirit of it. What is this? What is this? What is this? That's a great answer. I love it. I love these answers. It's really great. So the fact that the arm goes up and sends you out, sends you away, is not meant to, denigrate the value of your questions. Yes, please.
How are you?
How are you? It's great. You're great. Let's find out what's going on here first before. Yes, how are you? Great. I'm great, thank you. Come back another day. That's not your question. That's not the question that gets you into the monastery. Yes?
What are the teachings of the Buddha?
What are the teachings of the Buddha? Now, if you ask a Zen master that, now, the arm's not even going to go up. The door's going to be slammed in your face. The Buddha and his teachings, that old fart. What does he know? The kind of things Zen masters would say. Yes. Oh, why does the sun rise so high in the sky? It's a very interesting question. Can you unpack it a little bit more? Why would you ask that? Great. That's that's a great question. I like your question, and it's very interesting. Some of the questions we can ask about nature, because your question was, why does the sun rise so high in the sky? And in fact, the sun never rises at all, right? It's we're on this planet that's spinning backwards, and so it gives the impression of the sun going up and down, but it's not going up and down at all. So when we question sometimes some of the basic experiences that we look one way, we find out when we start questioning, they're very different than what they seem. And that's part of the value of questioning, is questioning the status quo, questioning the given, questioning the usual ways of interpreting our life and ourselves, and going beyond that. And so that's great. There's not many of you left anymore. Yes? What question should I ask? Okay? The abbot would say, that's for you to find out. That's the whole point. So, the young man goes around the world and he starts asking other people for help. And asks people, and got all kinds of wonderful questions like you guys gave this evening. And as he gets all these wonderful answers, he's really impressed by them. It really kind of changes him. It really inspires him. And just hearing the questions is so great. Just hearing the questions kind of opens him to some new possibility, something new. Just keeps opening him, each one open. And that's part of the value of questioning. It's not the answer. And that's kind of difficult. Sometimes people are so interested in the answer. Maybe the point is not the answer. Maybe the point is the way in which it opens us, kind of, to new possibility. So he goes around, and you know, every once in a while he comes back to the monastery and asks what he thinks is the right question, and sends away, and slowly over time, the distance, the length of time between visits to the abbot become longer and longer and longer. Becomes a month in between, 6 months in between, a year in between. And he just wanders around. Finally, he stops coming back at all to the monastery. And he just wanders around and goes around and asks people, what's the question? What's the question? And then many, many years later, somehow or other, the abbot is up out and about, and he runs into this man. And the abbot says to him, hey, you never came back. And what happened to you? And, oh, coming back. Oh, you. Oh, I forgot all about you. That became irrelevant for me, coming back to the monastery, being at the monastery. It's just been so meaningful and powerful and enlightening for me to just always be asking, what is the question? Which was the first one, right? What you said, what is the question? What is the question? So the abbot bowed and said, that's great. Now you can enter the monastery. And the man said, thank you, but now I don't need to. So, and so they bowed, and that was it. So what is the question? Is a great question. You know, in this very moment, in this situation, what's being asked of me? What's being asked? What's the question? What needs to be addressed? And rather than coming with some preconceived idea that you know what the answer is to life and to your spiritual life, you enter without knowing, but rather you enter with this, you know, what's required here? What's asked of me here? What's the question here? What's the issue at hand here? What's being called upon here? What is, you know, so the question, what is this, is closely connected to that. What is this? But not only what is this, but what's the question implies a little bit, in my mind at least, you know, what is the appropriate response? What is my, you know, what's being asked of me in this situation? Often the question, you know, like going to a monastery, you might think, I have a question that is for me. I want an answer for something. But rather thinking that questioning is about getting answers for yourself, it's more like, what is the world asking of me? What's the question the world has of me? What response am I asked to present in this situation? How do I respond? And in Vipassana, we put a lot of emphasis on the question, as I said earlier, what is this? Keep looking to have insight into what the nature of reality, nature of ourself, and see what's going on. In Zen, that's important. But they put a very important emphasis on something else, which sometimes is underemphasized in Vipassana. And that is the response side. How do we respond? What do we manifest in the moment, given the situation? And there's a tendency sometimes in Vipassana to end up being kind of passive, because you're just kind of noticing, learning how to be equanimous in the situation, being mindful, and what's going on, paying attention. And some Zen masters would just chase Vipassana students out the door, you know, because what's important is not your insight. That insight is easy, they would say. What's important is the manifestation, how you respond. And can you respond to the world with the appropriate response? Can you understand the question that the world has for you right now? What's being asked of you in this situation? So, I mean, it can be as innocent and simple as when it's time to leave here, that there's a few people in front of you in the shoe rack before, in front of your shoes. What's the question? What's the response? What's being asked of you there? Now, if you're set on your answers and your purpose and your dedication, those people are just the obstacles, and just, you know, bump those people aside so you can get your shoes and get home. Or you can say, what's being asked to hear? What's the question here? Kind of just open to the situation. What's the situation here calling for? If you're still, quiet, if you open kind of the fullness of your heart to the situation, really take it in. Drop your agenda, drop your desires, drop your self-centered ideas. What's this situation calling for? maybe it's simply calling for, I think I'll wait a moment, or maybe I'll say, excuse me, can you step aside? Or maybe it's being called for to say hello to them, or maybe they need help with something, and can I help you? Or what's being called for? What's this question? What's the question here? So I think what I learned through my Zen practice is that part of the way of questioning, kind of, you know, in our life, spiritual questioning, questing, is done also when we can drop ourselves, our self, a concern, our expectations, drop our agendas, drop our conceit, drop our concern with self-image, self-ideas, and drop all this kind of way in which we tend so much of the time to orient ourselves in life around the self, around ourself, myself. So we can drop all that and then say, what's the response? What's the question? And I remember very well the day in the Zen monastery, Tassajara. I've been there for almost 3 years, maybe 2 years at that point. I was, and realizing that somehow in letting go that the monastic life, the Zen life, Zen practice had done for me, helped me let go, let go, let go, something very precious arose. Something that felt very precious to me, very important. And that was a new deep appreciation or capacity to respond to what the situation was. To be open, to be empty to some degree. And then in that emptiness, there being a kind of a mutuality between a situation I'm in and the response that bubbles up inside of me. So much so it's not even me that's responding, but the response is happening. And that deep response that arises out of that emptiness, where it's almost as if I'm not doing it, became one of the most satisfying things I knew at that time. Deeply, deeply meaningful and satisfying. Feeling of being very right. So when we drop greed, hate, and delusion, drop our attachments and clingings, our fears, when we drop the sense of holding on to some secure image of this is who I am, or this is what I need to do in a situation, but letting life respond. And some people talk about that sometimes, letting life respond through you. It's kind of an abstract way of saying it. But so you're, in a sense, at that point, your life, not like you're asking a question all the time, but your very life itself is a question in that openness, that emptiness, where you just respond to the situation as if each situation you encounter is a question. Yes?
So I still ask, who's asking and who's asking who?
Yes. It's a great question. I love it. You want an answer?
No.
It's a great question. Now we can let you in. So you let into the monastery. See, there was something particular about that young man that maybe the abbot understood that he was going to be very hard to teach. And so he needed to have this very strange medicine of, you know, send him away. No matter, he had all these questions. Other people he would have said welcome for those kinds of questions that some of you asked. But this man, he couldn't. He knew he couldn't. He had to kind of somehow help him break through a certain kind of veil or some certain kind of encrustation of the heart and mind that he had. And there was that constant questioning and appreciating questioning and not settling on anything, not being able to settle, not giving permission to settle any place was what he needed to kind of finally break that crust. But you don't have so much crust, so please come. So, thank you very much. Thank you very much for your questions. And I hope that you will keep asking questions. I'll see you again all in a month.